This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, halflings! It's me, Jasper William Cartwright, and I am joined today by...
Jeremy Cobb, but Neil Powell from Dungeon Master's Block calls me Floyd Neil Powell the IV.
Oh, yeah. Isn't that, aren't you his son or something?
Yes, I'm officially his son.
That was the origin of that?
We hit it off so well, I've been adopted.
That's so good. So, so good. Well, today, halflings, I am so, so excited. It's finally happening. We have an incredible guest on the show today. She is going to be a juror for the Tribeca Game Festival, or for Tribeca Festival that's happening. For the games category, she is a part of the Black Dice Society that is over on Dungeons & Dragons. She's the founder and curator of Into the Motherlands as well, including the current Kickstarter that's happening. If you haven't guessed it already, it's the incredible Tanya DePass. How are you doing today?
Oh my god!
This is the wrong dungeon and the wrong dragon.
Full Prince vibe? Woof!
This makes them even more black!
Cake glitches and pitches.
And lands in the cusp of a teaspoon.
Oh, no!
On a nat 20.
No!
You think this is just a game?
That's disgusting and I love it.
Yeah. We're about to get into something real big now.
I'm good. You're going to make me blush with all of these listings. I'm like, oh, wait, he's talking about me. I got time to go. Goodbye.
But thank you so much for joining us, Tanya. The reason is you've got such an extensive list of incredible work. All of it at, like, the highest standard. I didn't even mention Rivals of Waterdeep, which is wild. I completely blanked on that one, which is crazy. So, thank you so much for being here. We've been very excited to talk to you. So first things first, we always do a little origin story on our show. We like to find out just sort of what got you into TTRPGs, what made you fall in love with them, what was your avenue into this crazy world that we find ourselves in?
Oh goodness. So I was like telling stories. I was always creative. I was a kid, you know, that always like filled notebooks and stuff. And D&D first edition was a way for me to flex that imagination, telling my own stories. And so I got into that. I am arcade years old. I remember going and lining my quarters up and, you know, waiting to get in and get in on Street Fighter and Cruising USA and things like that. But with D&D, you know, I was with it for a while. Actually was in a really long 3.5 year campaign when 3.5 was still the main edition of D&D. Kind of skipped over 4/Pathfinder. And then Greg Tito, who is a great friend, also works at WotC, invited me to come on Dragon Talk and, you know, talk about it because he had been following what I do with ID Diverse Games. And he's like, hey, why don't you come on Dragon Talk? I heard you talking about like D&D and how you hadn't played in a while and, you know, 5th edition's out. So, and also I just think what you do is really cool. And it's funny because even though I knew the man worked at Wizards of the Coast, it didn't click that it was like the official Wizards podcast.
Sure. Yeah.
Until I was like getting ready to like hop on the call and I was like, wait, this is like the for really real D&D podcast from WotC.
Oh shit.
Immediately
okay.
Got called like, into the big leagues.
Can I have 10 minutes? I just need to prepare for this little, you know.
It's like, you know, Greg's really cool and he's dope. And like we had a really good chat about like why I left D&D and about the lack of inclusion and just the barriers to entry. Because, you know, as we all know, that our hobby is not cheap. And so we just got into this great conversation. 5th edition had just dropped very recently. And then he's like, hey, and he showed me like the iconic human, which was a black woman in proper armor.
Yes.
And I was like, wait, she's dark skinned. She's got hair like me. She's a human. She's not like scantily dressed or whatever.
Yeah.
And oh my God, I'm back in. So that was all it took. And
Power of representation, right? Like,
right. It's and I was just, I was just like, dope, I'm in. I'm totally in for this. And like, he hooked me up with a lot of D&D stuff because I didn't have any of the books. I had got out of it. And, you know, I wasn't, you know, this was still when you really need to be able to go to your buddy's house. There was not really online play as a good option for people. So it was like, you know, a lot of my friends are now spread across the globe because thanks, internet. And, you know, time passed, you know, I got into it, did a few local games. And then later he was like, hey, do you know anyone in Chicago who'd be interested in doing a game, like an official WotC game? And I was like, sure. And so I hit up Shreve Cicero, Brandon. I was like, here's a thought. And like, some of them had never played D&D before, like had never touched a D20. And it was like, cool. And the whole idea was, it's easy to learn how to play D&D. And we never set out to be the brown shell. You know,
sure,
we never set out to be like the, hey, look, brown people playing D&D. But unfortunately, that's how we're pigeonholed now, 10 seasons later. But, you know, we got to go to Stream in the Eyes and we premiered, and it's just been uphill from there. And I sparked that love of storytelling, that love of tabletop, you know, got to play many other systems, many other things, got to make so many friends. You know, it's where I met B. Dave Walters, where I met Kristen Ariel in person, met Matt Mercer and all these cool people, where to me, they were just like names on a screen. They, you know, like I knew they were real people, but I was like, I'll never get to talk to those people.
Yes.
Yeah.
That is so the journey. That is so the journey. I can definitely testify
actually,
to that.
That kind of leads me into a question. We did something a little bit differently for this particular interview and allowed our patrons to submit questions on our Patreon. And Russ Lizetsky actually asked a very relevant question to this. You've been playing since 3.5, right?
I've been playing since first edition.
I remember reading that you've been playing since first. How would you say, Russ asks, he's curious for your insights into how the D&D community, TTRPG community, D&D itself, and other TTRPGs have evolved in managing their biases in recent years. How are there things that have improved, worsened, etc.?
I would honestly say that they have not. Because if you look at the reactions to some of the things some of us have said in, you know, like in media about the show and articles, when we got covered by the New York Times, the reactions of, I don't care about skin color. Why are you going to make it about race?
Mm-hmm.
Or like when, Brandon Stennis, who played Rin Liadon, talked about, he made his character dark skin on purpose. He is a black elf. Immediately someone jumped in and was like, oh, so you mean he's a drow? And it's like, no, he's just brown elf. Shockingly, elves can be multiple skin tones, just like people. And yeah. Also, elves aren't real.
Yeah, so there's no actual rules, right, guys?
Right.
You know this?
And, you know, just some of the things we've gotten, you know, and I don't want to downplay the success or the reaction and the positive reaction to Motherlands, but some of the questions we've gotten, some of the reactions we've gotten, you know, when we're on front page and they see all brown faces, some of the slurs, and when you just start seeing message deleted, message deleted, because we get front page.
Yeah.
It's, in many ways, the biases are getting there, but it's a very slow climb. There are good people who care, they want to fix it, and the problem is, one, a lot of, still the top people that are making games are all still mostly run by cis straight white dudes. And when we do make our own, then it's, you're excluding me. It's like, you have 50 years of games to go
yes,
play.
Yes, you have so much. Yeah. And we're not even saying you can't play this, right? Like,
I wish
you're
I
saying
could share.
You can.
Well, I mean, if it wouldn't be ethically wrong and just kind of tacky, I wish I could just make a mood board of all the messages I've gotten on Kickstarter can I play this? Am I white? Or how do I play this as a white person? This is gonna be my first cuss of the day.
Get it in
the fucking book and play it. You know, none of us, if any of us got on Twitter or social and said, you know, I really want to get in D&D, but can I play it as a black person?
Yes.
You yeah. know that we would be roasted forever. We would be roasted forever.
That's welcome to being a black person picking up any kind of fantasy thing. If you like, do you know what I mean? Unless you're born
basically
now.
Basically genre fiction in general.
Yeah.
Engaging with any form of genre fiction. Sort of like Afrofuturist, which is like that while it's a very what would be the word, fruitful genre, is not the mainstream.
No.
Right.
I completely agree. I think that there's a lot of friction right now. I feel like what you see, it feels like tectonic plates shifting between the sudden influx of new, more progressive and diverse players with the advent of like 5th edition, and then the old guard mainstream D&D, the people who are in charge, as well as just the people who have been fans, the majority, like the classic stereotypical white, straight, male D&D mm-hmm. player. Obviously, there have been people of all stripes playing D&D all along, as you proved, because you've been playing since 1st edition, but I think we're seeing I think with like shows like Critical Role, for instance, or other shows like Dimension 20 or Adventure Zone, the biggest D&D shows, their fan bases seem to have a huge progressive bent. To the point where, like in the case of Adventure Zone, there have been controversies when the fan base felt like the certain elements weren't progressive enough. But that clearly runs in contrast to, like, if you watch, I watched some videos from the recent Baldur's Gate 3. And the comments on there are like, I really like that the drow in this game are all really, really evil. And that all the goblins in this game are really this way. And I was like, oh, okay. This is clearly a very different crowd of people than the ones who say generally would be listening to our show. So I think you see, what you see, like, and the kickback that you guys have been getting, I think is a lot from that old guard who are trying to resist the change. And that's where I see the tension between the tectonic plates shifting.
Yeah, there's a lot of old guard and there's a lot of people that are just ridiculous. And there's no better way to say it, except the people that get mad about, you know, us wanting representation. And I'm like, you all will sit here and write dissertation length posts and books and articles about why, oh no, this is some SJW agenda, yada, yada. And I'm like, well, you know, the cyberpunk genre that you all love so much, hate to tell you, a black dude created it. Mike Pondsmith is a black dude. He's like an old school black dude. I'll tell you where to go when you him and his son. And his son created the Witcher RPG. So here are these two things that, you know, that a lot of people, and this, you know, folks may get mad, I don't know, and I don't care, of a lot of white people cling to as their thing.
Yep.
And, you know, the whole lack of humanity and cyberpunk stuff like that. And, you know, just the, oh my God, Polish mythology. Black people existed in medieval times, y'all.
Yeah.
We did not get manufactured because of U.S. of the mid-Atlantic slave trade. We existed. The Moors, all this other stuff. Pick up a fucking history book. But at the end of the day, this is still fantasy. None of elves and orcs and dragons and all this stuff is not real. But yet people will go to the mat to defend this and their realism. And I'm like, but it's not real. No one is actually an elf. Do you not understand this?
I can understand the wanting some definition for a fictional thing. Because in order for anything to kind of exist, there has to be a distinction between it and everything else around it. But when you have such a narrow idea of it that it's like, it can only be this way. I think what you're seeing is like the essence of an elf is not pale skin. Like that's not really the root of it. I think that's kind of what people, it's like, when people get upset, there are multiple reasons why people get upset at superheroes when they have their race changed. Like when people, when they're talking about a potential black Superman. But I feel like some of that is just based on the idea of like, but when I think of Superman, he's white. There's nothing about that character that's intrinsically white. You can even, there are black people in Kansas. Not tons of them, but we exist. There are black farmers in the United States. In fact, really, the fact that he's specifically from Kansas, I would say, is not as intrinsic to the character as just the fact that he's from a rural community in general. And there are plenty of those that are full of black people all over the U.S. So that character can easily translate. It's the same with elves. The elves are elegant, regal, ethereal, above it all, long-lived. There's nothing in that that is implicitly white. The reason they're coded that way is because Tolkien was drawing from that mythology, but like you're saying, they're fictional. You can easily say, well, there are regal, elegant, tall, beautiful black people who exist all over the world. You could just as easily reskin that. I'm right there with you.
But I think part of it as well is got to do with the fact that people see that as their, you know, in their own image, right? Like the cisgender white guy who has an issue with them changing the race of Superman is kind of going, well, I see Superman in my own image, and therefore I have a problem with you changing that image because then it's no longer me. And I'm like, well,
like Jesus. But you've every already culture got, has yeah. a different Jesus.
Yes, exactly. And I'm like, but you've already got him. That's not going anywhere, you know? We're just giving other people an opportunity to also experience the same thing. it's not difficult.
What was that movie? There was a trilogy. It was like Head Mockingbird. Because the character was like...
Hunger Games.
Yeah. Rue was described in the book as black.
And I remember this.
She was cast in the movie as black. And the way some of these people tripped out... And I'm like, did you read the book?
Mm-hmm.
Did you read
sure?
it? And I realized no one's going to see me making these gestures, but I want to do it anyway. So for those who are wondering what I'm talking about, I literally held up my hand like I was pointing at a book. Because I've gotten...
It was very convincing.
I know, but it was like... I'm so in Zoom mindset, I just assume everything's video now.
I do the same all the time on this show. I always do it. Especially when we're doing actual play stuff. I'm always and I come in like this!
It's such a thing for me, too. I will mime things constantly when I'm narrating.
Jeremy
and then I'm like,
mimes
oh,
stuff
yeah.
all the time. It's
and then you're
funny.
Like, wait, no one will ever see this.
unless you're part of the Patreon, then you'll can see
then
the actual
get video
of the actual play. And understand what all these awkward moments of silence are. We're just silently checking.
No, but it's just, it's so wild to me. Or, you know, and without reading it verbatim, because I also archived it, because reading it, I felt like I lost my key points. You know, like how people try to go the long way around and basically asking how to not be a racist? Someone did this, because the unfortunate part is, as I'm remembering, when you run a Kickstarter, anyone can message you whether or not they're a backer.
Right.
I did not know that until... Because I didn't have the same issues when I ran one other Kickstarter like a few years ago.
Feels like that should be a feature that they should bring in.
The feature should be fixed so that you can't say shit to me unless I set a level of you give me at least $10 and you can talk to me. But this person wrote like this long message about basically asking in a very roundabout way how to play this game respectfully as a white person.
Mm-hmm.
And they also included their character concept. And I'm like, I just looked at it and like I don't give a single flying fuck just jumped out of my head and my mouth. Cause I think we were prepping to go live on Motherlands when I saw it. And I was like, you misspell POC. How you misspell three letters? I don't know. You misspell final. And it could have been an autocorrect thing, but you think you'd catch it if you did it more than once. Because it was more than once. They clearly meant POC, but it was something else.
Wow.
And then they misspelled Hyanol. And they basically wanted to make a nice white person version of what I play on the show. And I was like, there'll be a section on how to play the other in the book. And that was all I said. And I was just like, because if I could turn on Rant Tanya, I will be here all night and I will miss the show.
Yeah, I do think this does bring up like quite an interesting point, though, which I think that we've had to kind of negotiate a little bit. And I didn't anticipate having to negotiate this, which is like what level you can invest in explanation, what level you can invest in kind of teaching people these things, and what level you kind of just need someone to go and find out for themselves, like to put in the work and to just figure it out, you know? Because I think that there definitely becomes like a certain level where you're like, oh, okay, here we go again, you know, trying to kind of go over the same things, the same points, which, to be honest, and this is the thing that I feel like we've come against in the show, people have made the point a lot better than I will. You know what I mean? So, like, don't come to me, go and read a book or something where someone's going to have written it down really well, this point that I'm trying to make. Do you know what I mean?
I think that's one of the advantages. I do know what you mean. I think that's one of the advantages of having a record, like having a, basically an archive of recordings. Because when we do sometimes get questions that we've already addressed on the show. And the nice thing is, once we've addressed it, it now exists in consumable form. So if a person already likes the show, we can be like, hey, go check this out. Or like the books you've read or articles or other videos that you've read, those are also exist as records. But I do understand what you, both of you are saying about like the fatigue of having people constantly coming at you. And some of them are coming in good faith, asking sincere questions. It sounds like this particular person was trying to come in good faith. They may not have successfully hit all the right, pressed all the right buttons along the way, but they it sounds like they may have had good intentions. But at the same time, you have some people with terrible intentions who are just slinging abuse or throwing up ridiculous points that, as a very small example, we haven't gotten a whole lot of this yet, because I don't think we're famous enough, but...
We're ready for it. It's coming.
hold that thought. Y'all are black and on the internet. That's all it takes.
Yes, exactly.
Exactly.
It's not a matter of fame. It's not a matter of visibility. It's... You are a black person on the internet with an opinion that you did not hold or you did not massage for white comfort. And that is all it takes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when we were on Dragon Talk, which has probably been the most mainstream exposure that we've had, most of the comments were very positive. But a couple of people were asking like these clearly very pointed questions that were just trying to be critical and clearly also indicated that they hadn't even watched the video because all of those questions were answered in the video itself. Like, I can only imagine if we were getting those kinds of messages on a very regular basis from people on Twitter and other platforms, just getting bombarded with this stuff and then mixed in with all of like the, hey, as a white person, I would really like to play a person of color. How can I? And they're like, what do you think about doing accents? What is blah, blah, blah. And like all of these. what I'm trying to say is when you mentioned rant, Tanya, I feel like I got an image of all of the components that went into creating rant, Tanya. All of like the Frankenstein's lab of all of the abuse and different things that were composed into this persona.
Yeah. And the thing is, rant, Tanya is and I say that and it's like the rant, Tanya may not be the best name for it, but it's the best I got in the moment of. Like you said, all those things where it's a constant bombardment, but it's also emotional labor. And at a certain point, it becomes emotional abuse when it's constant and it's harassment. You know, like someone back for simply a dollar, because that meant they could comment, and they just harangued us literally for days about how we rushed this. We were so unprofessional, all because everyone is so caught up on, you haven't said what system it's using. And it's like, okay, I get it. And I'm going to be greasy on Maine. And let's just say I know a lot of that is because of the other Afrofuturist Kickstarter that is now almost 2 years late. Radu tried to do by himself and was a whole problem because he acted like the one and only black person and arbiter of true blackness in RPGs and bludgeoned people with, if you don't support me and you white, you are automatically a racist. And if you're not white, then you don't want to see somebody succeed. And it's like, but hold on. Let's go back and look at the tape, shall we? Mm. What black people did you go to publicly to promote your shit? Mm. What black people did you go to that you gave an early look to, which, again, publicly, very publicly, you ran to every big white name in the industry to hawk your I'm blacker than black as every black person's ever been book. That's 2 years late. And now because that has been a concern ever since that all went down of this dude has fucked it up for everybody else. And since we black people and we're here, let's just put it on the table. One, not all skin folk is kinfolk. And two, whether or not you want to, whether or not we like it, once you have any visibility, you become the arbiter of blackness often against your will. And you know, people put you on a pedestal. They act like, oh, well, you made it. I got to start. Like, no, just I'm going to put this out here. Don't try to be like nobody but you. but also realize that your one mistake, because, you know, we can't fuck up.
Yeah.
We fuck up.
This, we've talked about this a lot. Yeah.
Yep.
Then everybody else black suffers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a heavy weight to bear. The thing is, none of us ever ask for it. It's just put around our neck like yokes of old, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, I'm just trying to make a dope game with people I like and give people some of the joy that I've gotten coming back to RPGs. But no, we need to be held up like we're perfect. Oh, you did this. And it's like, stop giving people so much fucking credit. Stop treating them like they're gods because they managed to put out a book. Plenty of people put out books. And in this case, they even put out a book.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Look, I told y'all I was going to get greasy on Maine because I'm tired.
Oh, man,
it's Friday.
No, I'm here for it. Like, we've spoken about it a few times on the show about this kind of the realization that, oh, like, we need to be, like, perfect. Like, we need to be very good at what we're doing because there's, like, there's this expectation which just doesn't come with doing, you know, like we just haven't noticed from similar people, similar shows that have started around a similar time that don't get, you know, comments or thoughts or, you know, things that we do. And also there's a pressure from, you know, we get incredible comments. We get people that are like, you've done so much and you've helped us. And
which is the majority.
You know, which is absolutely the majority, but that also in itself makes you go like, okay, let me just...
Because you end up feeling pressure.
Catch my breath a second, because that's a lot of pressure.
I wondered, do you feel like Wizards and like the people in charge of D&D are trying... How, with varying success, let's say, to move in a more progressive direction. Considering, like, for instance, you have been on Dragon Talk. They sought us out last year. We've been on Dragon Talk. You're on official D&D shows, like streams and so forth. It seems like there is the human, as we mentioned, the model human woman for 5th edition is a black woman. I don't think anybody would say that it's perfect. Well, nobody who's not white would say that it's perfect. But I think, would you agree that there seems to be a general, perhaps glacial movement of Wizards itself to shift more towards diversity?
There is a very slow movement, and the thing is, and you know, mindful of, you know, inside baseball, what I know and what I can't talk about. As with any company, and this is the frustrating part, is that, you know, I have the privilege to know a lot of insider baseball, and I know that there are people who are doing their best and they're doing what they can, but also people don't seem to realize WotC is now owned by Hasbro. And so it's not just, oh, this spunky little company that used to be TSR, now they are owned by Hasbro and they're part of a larger thing. They are making an attempt, but also what we saw with what happened to Orion Black and some people who wrote for Candlekeep Adventures and the experience that they had, it feels like for every couple of steps forward, they fall several steps back. And I think a lot of it's not going to change until they get people on staff that are not white dudes. And, you know, I like Jeremy, he's a friend, but also... stop holding up, look, we're good at the queer thing as their arbiter of diversity. Because Rivals is their only...
This is Jeremy Crawford, by the way, not me, Jeremy.
Yes.
Okay, yeah,
not you.
Yeah, Jeremy.
You don't work in WotC. You don't work in WotC, so... but, you know, just getting people in the door that, you know, are not white dudes, whether they be cis... Or straight or whoever, or queer, and get people that you're going to actually listen to and not have more situations like what Orion went through and had to speak out very publicly about. Because how many of us have been the only black person at a company? We've been the only black person at the table or in the room. And this is the part where I get the frustration, because, I mean, I know we saw all the things of people who wanted movement, they wanted immediate response from WotC, they want all this other stuff, but it's like a corporate wheel is very slow. And this isn't excusing WotC, don't get me wrong, but people seem to forget that there is no one person in any company that can just pull the lever and make things happen. You know, you got to have a meeting about a meeting, get a committee about a committee, and do all this other stuff before you can say anything publicly. Lawyers got to look at it. You got to massage it. People got contracts and NDAs. They can't just be out here ripping their bag open and letting everything fall out because you personally are mad and affronted. Because what I found is a lot of the people who want to be out here mad and affronted never would have worked with WotC anyway. They hate D&D. We know they hate D&D. But instead of being productive and going to find something else to do with their time, like, okay, you hate D&D. We've established that. What are you doing to make the system better? And this isn't a don't talk about WotC, but if all you ever do is get on Twitter and yell and scream and talk about how bad WotC is at every opportunity, every turn, but yet you actually do not contribute to the community, the greater RPG community, what are you doing beside just stoking fires? Go lift up other people of color. Go lift up women and queer folks. Go lift yourself up. Go make a fucking, you know, one-page RPG.
Hell yeah.
And also the people that want to come after folks of color who are still working with WotC or work at WotC, you know, they do have some designers of color now. Are you going to really sit there and expect these people to quit their jobs in solidarity in the middle of a pandemic, in the middle of an employment slump, because their moral superiority has to be higher than your outrage? And that's the part that I think people, it makes me angry. I'm not even going to say frustrated. It makes me angry because you'll get these people that go, well, you should quit. Okay, you paying my bills? Where's the I should quit money?
Yeah. Where's
I should quit fund.
yeah. Where's the black fund that's been set up for me to quit this job?
Or even we should make our own. I'm like, okay, that's cool. But let's be real. Motherlands was funded by Twitch's money. I didn't have that kind of money just sitting around. I couldn't have crowdfunded that kind of money. And because we had the base of the show, that's why the Kickstarter is doing well. Because B. Dave Walters, who has done several successful Kickstarters and knows what he's doing and has a marketing background and is running the show for that, that's why it's successful. This isn't people just giving you money because you're black and they feel sorry. Trust me. The ways that people have responded to Motherlands, to the Kickstarter, to some of us and the things we do, if it was just simple, if I held my hat out virtually and said, give me money because I'm black, I wouldn't have to work, but I'd also be really bored.
Yeah, wouldn't be the most fulfilling.
But to not ramble, not get too far off the path, is that the moral purity tests of people who want to sit here and be mad at WotC and whoever because they don't fit their personal, you know, definition of morally pure. And because I, like, you know, we brought up Critical Role earlier and people sit there and talk shit about Critical Role. And granted, you know, I didn't know about Critical Role much because I could never stay up and watch it. Mm-hmm. And I got into it more after I met Matt and got to know him, got to kind of watch the show, but I still can't make it through a whole episode. It's 1 a.m. But I actually saw someone write an open letter, a white queer, no less, write an open letter to Critical Role saying, you should fire the cast or some of the cast and give a black person a role.
What?
And I saw that and I was just like,
they friends. Like, come on.
It's a fundamental misunderstanding of what that show is.
But it's not even just how that, it's not even just that they're friends and the show grew out of a friend's, out of a home game because they're all voice actors. It's, again, you expect them to just literally fire someone on your fucking say-so when you're not even speaking for the group that you want represented. You're a rando white dude who happens to be queer that is writing an open letter like you have that much weight and responsibility. Or just even when people go, you should fire so-and-so or so-and-so should quit. Or like, you know, whenever there's those calls for firing someone, and granted, I have no qualms saying someone should be fired if they fucked up and they're a terrible person, they're abusive. I'm not excusing that, but a lot of people go from zero to this person should be fired. Oh, and you should just give this other person a job. They don't know if that person wants a job. They don't know if that person is willing to move for a job, has any interest, is even looking for a job. Or, you know, it's like, and it comes down to what a lot of us deal with, and, you know, and I'm including you all in this, is that people forget that we're people. They treat us as personas. They treat us like we're walking object lessons. And people have already treated Motherlands like an empathy engine. Oh, I can't. And I saw a tweet about this. I didn't respond. I was just like, And time to mute you, because if I answer, it's going to be real bad right now. Because it was 6 in the morning pre-coffee when I saw the tweet. I'm like, let me just...
That's never a good time to respond to anyone. Mm. Like, it's just, yeah.
But it's like, people are treating this like it's some grand social experiment empathy engine. And I'm like, no, we're just making a fucking sci-fi game. Go play it.
Fucking great game. Just, you know what I mean? Like, if you want to play it, give us the money. If you don't, then don't. Like, it's fine.
And also, like, no one is making you back the Kickstarter. People act like we... appearing behind them with a gun to their head going, give us money.
This HeadGum Podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, wow.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt.
Mm-hmm.
So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective, unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
This whole conversation is reminding me of the classic hip-hop song, The Message. Like the, don't push me, cause I'm close to the edge. Exactly. It's what it feels. I think for probably any kind of minority creator trying to enter a space like this, you get hit with all of these pressures, and over time it just wears on you, and it can be difficult to navigate. I think there's certainly for us, and I'm sure, I mean, like, look at the overwhelming positive response that Into the Motherlands has gotten, and like our show has gotten all sorts of positive response. Like, there's definitely many bright spots, but it can get real tough out there sometimes. I did want to ask, on a slightly lighter note, Jason Lillis from our Patreon had asked, what's it like jumping back and forth between all the systems that you create for and play? Do you have a special way of prepping for each, or a mental categorization trick that helps best?
So for Motherlands, it's mostly kind of touching base, and we get on Zoom early enough, where we have about 40 minutes while our producer gets everything together and we get a chance to chat. And usually Eugenio, if he hasn't reached out by either Slack, email, or some other way, he kind of, you know, he tells us kind of like, you know, it'll be combat heavy, it'll be more narrative heavy tonight. This is what I'm planning. This is where I hope to end at, because Motherlands has gone from a 3-hour show to a 2-hour show. Mm. So, you know,
I know the feeling.
There's less time to tell the story. But also, he still has a plan for what we're doing, and you know, it's kind of getting in position, getting in the character's head with any show, and with Rivals, it's a lot more because I'm the producer as well as being on camera. So it's the, will technology fail me today? What's going to go wrong? Did Windows update? Because
I know the feeling.
Yeah, not this last episode, but the second episode of our current season, Windows screwed up audio and it wasn't picking up my headphones, wasn't picking up my mic, and I'm like, I'm talking. And the irony is, we were in the Zoom call, but then Audacity didn't want to pick up anything, and then XSplit was like, who are you?
Yeah.
I'm just like, oh my god, I'm going to cry. And I almost did. That's why I looked so grumpy in that episode.
Yeah.
And then with Black Dice, it's a little more complicated because it's horror. It's something very different from how I normally play. My character is very different from like Sleece or Invicta or other characters I've got to play. And we're normally in costume. Last few weeks post-move, I'm like, oh god, where is everything? I can't find it, anything. But it's getting more into that mindset. And again, we're on our Zoom calls pretty early. So usually it's like we check in, and Dave is very communicative. We have a group Twitter DM where we kind of check in, or somebody's running late, what have you. But it's getting in that mindset of, okay, it's Dave. He may kill all of us. Who knows? I've gone to death saves twice within 10 episodes. And, you know, I'm playing a Dampier, which is different, and it's new with Ravenloft.
Oh, I love those.
Yeah.
And I'm playing a Drow, which normally I have feelings about the Drow, but I'm trying to do my small part to turn it on its head.
Yes.
And, you know, with all the new stuff that's in Ravenloft, kind of things we get to do with each level. We're level 3 now. We started at level 1, and it's getting in that mindset. And also, you know, we're in a Zoom call, so we're always checking in. And kind of going, hey, I want to do a thing. It's kind of rude, but you know, it's just in character. And you know, that check-in at the table is a thing that keeps us going. And it is 3 hours. We also record a post session for the patrons. So Thursday is also kind of a long night. And usually by the time we're done with that, we're all like, I like you all, but I got to go. It's been like 4 hours. But then I wind up being up super late because the brain won't shut off. I'm sure you're used to that, where like after a game, your brain is like,
oh. Yeah, so
that's why actors drink so much, partly, is because like after a show, you have all this adrenaline, you're just and you like everybody wants to go out and drink. Like it's tough to come down sometimes.
Yeah, it is. I've found myself many a time finishing a session and then just sort of sat there, especially like Wagadu. I feel like when there's like an audience element to it, and you know, that kind of adds a whole kind of extra element of excitement, and then you kind of, oh boy, okay, right, what's happening? It's hard to recalibrate and be like, oh yeah, I'm a normal human. I don't have any major proficiencies to worry about. Okay, I can just roll to sleep now. I mean, just sleep.
So Tanya, would you say that it's more of like, it's not necessarily a mechanics switch that you're having to make in terms of like remembering all the systems, but more in terms of like, for some of them, it sounds like it's like the surrounding stuff that you're having to worry about. And then for some of them, it's like zeroing in on the character and the tone of the game. Would you say that's accurate?
Yeah, because, I mean, with D&D, I could play D&D in my sleep for the most part. But, you know, with Motherlands, because it's Cortex, and yes, it's a dice pool, and we're used to it. This is now season 2 of the game, and I'm used to it. It's just kind of thinking about, okay, here's a scenario, here's a challenge. What am I trying to accomplish? What dice work best? And, you know, it's not as fumbly for me as in the first season, because, you know, that was like, okay, we've got this funding, we're trying to do this thing, we have all these eyes on us, and it's a new system, great, here we go. So it's more, with the two D&D shows, it's just kind of like tone and making sure I'm present, making sure that, you know, other than, at least for Rivals, other than mechanics of making sure the stream doesn't break, is making sure I'm there. And then for Black Dice, it's being very present, because even though I may not be in a scene, there's still things that, as a player, as long as I don't metagame it, there's still things I should know as a player, because it's Dave, again, it's B Dave, and we know that he goes in for the long haul.
So everything is relevant. Like all these little things, they are relevant.
Something that happened literally in the first or second episode was called back to last night before, like the day before we were recording this. And So it's just like, oh, I got to be like Marisha and have my notes.
Yeah. I got to be drowning in notes. I realized that recently with Jeremy as well, much to my own detriment. But
really?
Yeah. But I create way too many things.
So
by
many.
The end of it, everyone is just like, so we right. know like 30 different people, and yeah. it's like session 4.
Yeah, that's a Jeremy session.
We need to
session.
Make a quick chart.
Yeah, oh yeah, we need, a, we need a family like, tree for this.
You're like the dude, what's the dude from Pacific Rim with like, or is that from Pacific Rim, like the guy with the red yarn?
The actor is in Pacific Rim. The scene is from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, where he has like the board with all the string.
And he's
the crazy, yeah. And on top of that, there's always like some mystery, so you're trying to figure out what's going on. So you're full on like, there's a conspiracy, and I think they're involved because of this person did this and that person. Yeah, it's the same kind of thing.
Yeah, that's absolutely it. We absolutely should get a little bit into the Motherlands, because the Kickstarter is you're killing it right now. It is amazing. Mm-hmm. Just love to talk a bit about that, because obviously, like you've just brought up, the sort of show itself was a Twitch thing, and now you're moving into making this sort of content and a book, and I'm just like, first of all, where did that come from? Was that something that did Twitch reach out to you, and then what was the kind of emphasis on, you know, getting the old POC team together, and I just love to hear about that. It's such an incredible project, and it looks incredible. I backed it on Kickstarter, and then I got through and I was like, oh, there's extras. Oh, damn. Okay, well, I need a dice set, and then I need this, and then I'm going to need some of this as well. Like, it was, yeah. So I'm very, very excited for this, but I'd love to hear about how this all started.
Oh, boy. So I was working with Twitch, kind of, you know, behind the scenes pitching some stuff, and initially I pitched, like, some show ideas, because Rime the Frostmaiden was about to come out, and also, you know, I Need Diverse Games has a Sunday night RPG show that's all POC. And I wanted to do Star Trek again, because I'd done it before on Roll 20, and I missed it. A lot of the cast was like, yeah, I'd love to get back together. We would just do a new game. And so I threw out those ideas, and they're like, well, you know, there's a glut of fantasy already. It said IDG would be a different conversation, because that is a different organization and entity, because this is tied to me as a streamer, as Cypher of Tyr.
Uh-huh.
And then with Star Trek, it was just like, I'm not sure, IP. And I'm like, okay, fine, whatever. And they're like, how about you tell your own sci-fi story? And I was like, what?
Sure.
But, you know, I don't know how many people realize, I used to want to be like a professional novelist.
Ooh.
And, you know, it just cool. didn't happen. Mostly because writing novels is hard, as I've discovered as I make more friends in the writing industry. You know, it's people think there's some magic to writing. And I'm like, no, it's being able to put words down that other people want to read. and doing it well enough for people to pay you money. And so when I'd initially done the pitches for the other ideas, I reached out to a bunch of people that I'd work with, collaborate with, or just like would have loved to work with in general. I'm like, here's the idea, kind of here's what it is. Would you have interest in any of these two things? And then when it pivoted to let's tell our own story, I was like, okay, well, here's the thing. Would you be more interested, or where do you feel stronger about on-screen talent, developing, what is it you like to be involved with? Do you have time? Because at that point, we had no idea when we'd start, what our goal was. All we knew was we were getting X amount of money, and we had until the end of the calendar year to produce 36 hours of content. That's what we knew at that point.
Right, yeah.
And, you know, and this was pretty early on, but we still knew, like, oh, if we need to produce X hours by end of calendar year, we need to start, oh, we have 2 months. Oh, boy.
Oh, wow.
So David already said yes.
Just
so he and I,
make your own sci-fi in 2 months. Yeah, you good?
Well, it
you're
was, good? You know, it was, because initially, you know, we just talked about having the show, and then as we move forward and everything else, I'm like, I want this to be an RPG book. I want this to be a book people can hold in their hand and sit down and play, you know? Because we got such a good reaction. Because again, before we premiered, we were like, will people like this? Will they act right? Because we had front page as part of the everything else. And, you know, if you get to be front page, you know the fun it can be.
Mm-hmm.
And but, you know, we had such a great positive reaction. We had people that were really feeling it, and they were interested. And because a lot of people burned out on fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we move forward and we're like midway through, we're like, let's do a book. And so Dave and I sat down, we mapped out the calendar, we got everybody kind of settled. And as you know, from trying to run games, it was like herding cats, trying to get a day and a time everyone that said they wanted to do on-screen talent was available.
Hell yeah.
And so for the first season, it wound up being Sunday. So my day was pretty full, basically Rivals, a couple hours, and then Motherlands until 9 o'clock my time. So yeah, it worked out. And then like kind of midway through, it was like, hey, let's talk another season. Is this something you're willing to fund, not fund? And, you know, it was a whole lot of conversation. So for those of you that don't know how deals work, it can take a long time. So if you would like someone who is currently giving you money to keep giving you money, start the conversation early.
Sure, that's good. I'm going to write that down now.
Yes, if you have someone willing to sponsor you and it's monetary, have a conversation, have a check-in, know what your deliverables are, etc. And so we knew before the current season ended. Well, no, that's not true. We knew fairly soon after that first season ended, we'd be getting a second season. But as we all know, NDAs, embargoes, yada, yada. So we had to actually wait until I went on Twitch Gaming to announce it. But we made it like an exclusive. You're on Twitch Gaming. You get to know we're going to have a new season starting in 7 days. but it was interesting. And it's been so cool to see everybody bring their own spin to it, make their own characters, kind of go. And for us to basically back the truck up and fill it with sand of our choosing versus having to go and play in the sandbox that everyone else has walked through after they came out of the ocean. Like, this is nice, clean sand that we get to play in.
I think it's so weird as well. This was like a really weird, like, kind of full circle moment for us, because I think Christina Ariel was one of our, like, she was quite early, like third or fourth guest or something,
and one of the first people to start listening to the show as well.
Like, and shared us and stuff, and it was so funny because one of the first questions we asked was like, hey, we just saw Into the Motherlands was announced, and like, can you give us any details? And she was like, well, you know, kind of like, not really. And it feels so awesome to now kind of like hear this from you about how that process went down and the making of it. And I'm just so glad that the Kickstarter is doing as well as it is, and I can't wait to see like what that's gonna end up looking like and being like. So we're a big fan.
It's been really dope too, because and we talked about this like when the first season ended and we got everyone on the Zoom call, like we took a break and brought everyone on that was available. And we had the devs and everyone just talking. And I believe it was that bronze girl, Jasmine Bular, who talked about how refreshing it is to be with other people of color. You don't have to wear the mask. I don't have to put on corporate Tanya. I don't have to go, yeah, sure, let's involve those paradigms. Sure. You know, we're making canon. So if someone wants to do a cool thing, we're like, cool, that's canon now. And we can do that.
Yeah. Like, there's so many, like, weird small things that you don't realize until you get into a room full of POCs. Because I think for most people, if you're growing up either over here in the UK or in America, like, it's kind of rare that you're in, like, an all-POC kind of creative space like that. And you don't realize the kind of the limitations that you've had. So it's like, it almost feels like you're kind of, like, set free a little bit when you suddenly go, oh, we don't have to worry about whether this is going to be the right tone or whether this is going to send the right message about people of color, or to be like all these weird pushbacks that you get when you suggest something when there's like a majority of white people or whatever in the room. And I think that like, it's so true about like, just, oh, I've just realized I'm not wearing a mask. I'm not like doing a weird thing right now, which I normally do. And then you realize it's a weird thing, you know?
Yeah. And there's also the, we're making stuff that we want to make because it's cool and it's dope. We're not making it for the white gaze. We're not sitting here compromising for white people to be comfortable. And I know folks will get mad, and I'm like...
for all of you at home, there was some peace signs thrown up there by Tanya, if you didn't get the... and just quickly, because I'm aware of like the time and everything, but I'd love to... you were talking to us just before we started recording about a film that's going to be at Tribeca? Is that correct? This is, I mean, tell us about this. This sounds amazing. We need to link this. When's this coming out? What's it about? Tell us.
So Tina Charles, WNBA player and also filmmaker, hit me up on Twitter. I was like, hey, I want to pitch an idea to Tribeca. For those who don't know, the Queens Collective, run by Queen Latifah, is an initiative to get more Black women behind the camera and not just in front of it, well, also in front of it. And so every year, I guess they bring Black-made films, but specifically by Black women, to the festival. And it was like, hey, I want to pitch this, no guarantees, yada, yada. And then a couple months later, she called me. It was funny because I had just gone live on stream. And I'm like, well, I got to take this call. I got to make sure that I, like, mute my mic so the captions don't get me. Because, you know, how many of us have not muted our mic, even though we, like hit the mute on the stream, but didn't actually physically mute the mic?
Yep.
And then the captions don't get you.
Yeah.
Walked away, and that's when she told me, yeah, they picked my idea. We're going to make this movie.
So awesome.
And it's a short film about me and the work that I do in the industry and about diversity and inclusion. It is premiering in person at Tribeca June 17th. And then you can buy a ticket to watch it for Tribeca at Home on the 18th. And if you just go to Tribeca and look up Festival Guide Films, and it is under the shorts or Queen or Studios Queen. It's not under Tribeca Studios, not listed there. But yeah, you can watch it starting June 18th. At 6 p.m. for $15.
Very, that's so exciting. What an amazing thing. Like, you're in a film about you. That's so awesome. Sweet. So to wrap up this, we always ask our guests for a tale from the table. Just like a wild experience, something that's happened at the table. It can be from a home game. It can be from something you've streamed. Just something wild that's happened that sticks out in your head. Usually the more chaotic and silly, the better. That's what we always tend to go for. So anything like that, we'd love to hear it.
So the season that I GM'd Rivals, season 8, the Rivals wound up in Rivals End, which is a prison in Bryn Shander. And I constantly had to remind them that they were in jail. And I was like, you know, they were like, I'm just going to go get so-and-so. I'm like, you're in jail. You don't have your possessions. We literally RP'd you getting checked into jail and them taking all your stuff. And the good thing is, I mean, good slash, I'm glad of, none of us know how prison actually works.
Sure.
Because I'm sure a lot of people are like, well, don't you just know how this works? No, I've never been to jail. Thank you very much. Yeah. Just because we're brown doesn't mean we know what it's like to go to jail. But what got me specifically, and Brandon, I hope if you hear this, you'll laugh too, is Rin, played by Brandon Stennis, decided he was going to flirt with one of the NPCs I'd made. And he decided he was going to go as far as, like, breaking his elbow to get this guard's attention, so he'd have to take him to the infirmary. Ooh. And I just, you can see the look on my face. Where I'm like, let me get this right. You want to actually injure yourself. So this NPC has to take you to the infirmary for whatever reason you think you really need to go to the infirmary in this prison. Like, yes. And then he changed his mind because after some rolls, he realized the thing he was looking for was not in the infirmary or the NPC. And I'm just like, you were about to break your elbow. Now, keep in mind, I've never broken a bone, knock on wood. I've never done it. Do you know how immobile you would be if you broke your elbow?
For like and a long really, time as well. Like not-
and he's like, but there's magic. And I'm like, but you're not a healer. You know, the person who can heal isn't with your party right now because I'm the GM and Selyse is off doing whatever she's doing.
And you're in prison. Like,
and like, even if you went to the prison jail, they're not going to waste magic on a prisoner. And my brain just, I start going off on this total tangent of like, you're in jail. But that whole season, I sit there and go, you're in prison. You don't not have your prison. Things. And it was just, it was such chaos. But after a while, but the other part of that was Latia's character decided to start a fight. And she's a monk. Ooh. So, you know, monks are ridiculous, especially like level 13 is where I think we were that season.
Mm.
And, you know, you get like 3-4 attacks. You can action surge to get more attacks. And I'm just like, you just started a fight with a whole gang of NPCs that just wanted to talk to you. Literally, that's all they wanted. And now you've made it harder to achieve your objective because you did the movie monologue thing of telling them your whole story and that we don't really belong here. This is just a ruse. And I'm like, and I just sat there and I really was like, oh, okay. Okay, I'm just... You know what? Y'all have this fight. Let's see what happens.
Fuck around and find out.
Yeah. I was like, you really thrown... Like, why did you tell... Because the reason the fight happens is because they decide to tell the NPCs why they were in jail. They don't really belong there. And I'm like, that has never worked in any movie ever.
Or in real life.
Yes, especially not in real life.
Was wrongly convicted, as far as they're concerned.
And I'm just like, y'all gonna die in Rebel's Hand.
That's so funny. I can feel that moment. Like, it's so tangible. Like, I can feel it. The moment where you as a DM kind of go like, really? Okay, really? Are you sure? Because I did mention earlier. No? Okay, we're still... Okay, you're going to break your elbow. Okay, okay. Roll your dice.
Yeah, yeah. And we still don't quite know what happened to Brandon's character because he left the show willingly. You know, he was like, I've kind of hit my end goal of what I want to do. So all we know is he went off with his guard, and we don't quite know what actually happened.
He broke his elbow, was taken away, and we never...
Well, he decided not... Yeah, well, he decided not to do the breaking elbow thing, but he did go with the NPC, which I freely admit, I based off Fenris from Dragon Age 2. except I made him, like, this ridiculously overpowered fighter. I'm like, just remember... Yes, you're level 13. I've made the NPCs in Rebel's End pretty strong. So y'all can start a fight, but it may not go the way you plan.
There is definitely a certain confidence that comes from players once they get, I feel like, over about level 11, level 12, they start thinking the world's a lot smaller than it is. And sometimes you just have to remind them. Sometimes you have to just go, hey, just so you know, you're not the biggest fish in this pond. Not just yet. Do you know what I mean? You got a couple more levels to go before you start really smoking stuff. So just stay calm.
And yeah, I mean, we're level 15 now.
I feel like at level 15, that's where I as a DM start getting a little bit squeaky. I'm like, ah, man, there's a few things I can throw at you, and it feels like we're in TPK zone here, or we're in like, or you're just gonna smush.
That's kind of what happens, is once you get past a certain point of power, the monsters kind of become an all or nothing affair. It's like you either manage to beat these gigantic, like, city-destroying monsters, or you guys lose.
Yeah.
Right, or you die.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
forever. Kind of die as well. Not
You end up with, somebody get banished or like all sorts of like feeble-minded, like all sorts of craziness starts to happen at those levels, I feel like, as well.
Yeah, so much craziness. Well, Tanya, thank you so much for being here. Obviously, before you go, please tell everyone, anyone who doesn't know you all of your stuff, where they can find it, where they can find you on the internet and interact with your stuff, and especially this Into Motherlands Kickstarter, because everyone needs to see this.
I'm far too easily findable on the internet as Cyphertyr, CYPHROFTYR. That is me, my streams, stuff I'm doing personally, announcements. And while we're taping, I was finally able to say that, speaking of rivals, Selyse is going to be an Idol Champions.
Yeah!
Oh, yeah!
So cool. So cool.
So by the time you're hearing this, you'll be able to play as Selyse in Idol Champions.
That's really cool.
And...
That's some end goals. That's some end goals stuff for sure. Like, I feel like getting a character in Idol Champions, like, okay, I'm here now. This is cool.
It's wild. I'm gonna be in a video game. It's so wild to me.
Yeah, that's very cool.
And then for Rivals Waterdeep, everything is Rivals Waterdeep on Twitter or Rivals of Waterdeep on Twitch. Sunday is 10 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Central. Come hang out. This will be week 4 of our shenanigans in season 10 to the road to 100 episodes. Instagram, all that fun stuff. We have a Patreon where you can get the podcast version early. And depending on how our patronage goes, we may try to do extra content, play games with folks. It's just a matter of time and hitting our patron goals. And then Black Knight Society, you can find me Thursday nights, 4 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Central. Official Wizards social channels, which is Twitch and YouTube. And Wednesdays on my channel, which this upcoming week is episode 7 of Into the Motherlands. And that is also 4 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Central. Into the Motherlands RPG on Kickstarter, which ends June 19th at like 2 in the morning Pacific. So as we are chatting, the Kickstarter may have tipped over to 240. I have to double check.
Damn.
Whoa.
We're close. We are $12 away from $240,000.
$12. Wow.
Some hefty numbers.
Wow.
Yeah, it seems unreal, but also, pro tip, when you run a Kickstarter, they get 5% before you see a single penny, minus anything else.
Ooh, that's good to know. Yeah.
Yeah, so be prepared for a good chunk of that money, even though you're super excited for that high number, to go away before you even get to touch it.
Yes, 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 sure. I feel like there's been, you know, we've been like, oh, you know, it'd be cool if we could release content and stuff one day. And then I saw your Kickstarter, I was like, you know, that's a whole chunk of change. I don't know if I want to be messing around with those kind of numbers, so I'm just going to stay in my lane over here.
Well, you know, and I know we're really doing outros, but a quick thing about Kickstarter, too, is that people seem to think that means that's all extra money.
Mm.
It's not. Because the more people that pledge, the more things you have to produce.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We don't, like, a lot of the physical things are add-ons for that reason. Instead of going, everyone gets a Bertrand. Everyone, at certain levels, everyone does get the dice.
Yeah.
But, you know, instead of guaranteeing all these physical extras, because someone has to design it, someone has to make it, someone has to ship it, someone has to assemble your whole, you know, award that you pledge for and get it to you. And, you know, with you being in the UK, we have to deal with that. And shipping.
Yeah, sorry. Thank you, though. I appreciate it. I'm excited for my dice.
Yeah, no, but people, like, well, as we ask for new stretch goals, people came with such outlandish things. And I'm like, so that's like a few thousand more you're adding per person, mind you. Because we got to design it. We got to make it. We got to see if people want it. And I even saw someone say, oh, Kickstarter's free money. I'm like, since when?
Yeah, I'm still making something. Free money. Yeah. It's definitely not like just like cash in the pocket, you know, let's all go out for a nice night out. It's like, no, we're making a thing which is going to cost a lot of money. You know what I mean? Like, we set a goal of like, this is the bare minimum of what we could possibly make this thing for. Any more just makes it less, you know, scary to make, right? It's not like, we're millions. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's definitely,
you know, it'd be great to hit like a half million or a million. But again, the more money you bring in, the higher the expectation is. And again, as we said, since we're black folks, we can't fuck this up.
Amen.
Tanya, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. And just like a pleasure when, you know, when we first started out on this journey, you know, you've been, you know, one of the constants of this community. And I think that, you know, you've done so much for it. And I think that it's pretty amazing to get to talk to you about this stuff. And so thank you for everything you're doing. And hopefully we'll get to chat to you again some other time. But thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah. And I'd love to like do like a fun one shot where basically we just have to show up and we just play. And it's not like, oh my God, I want to shoot my shot and play with you or whatever. It's like, we're going to be off a stream. We're going to sit here with our drinks and just chill.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, I've done it once before. And we're actually thinking about potentially just maybe recording some of them as well. But I've done a completely improvised one shot and it was so much fun. Jeremy, your character was called, what was it? Denaldius Duck?
Yes, Denaldius
a level 15
Duck.
Gloomstalker something?
He was a Gloomstalker Ranger mixed with, I think, Assassin Rogue and something else. I don't remember.
It was
very strong, very overpowered.
Very, very overpowered. It was incredible. So yeah, like for sure. Let's just do a little, let's do an improvised game. Let's get together. Absolutely. That sounds great. But yeah, thank you so much for coming on the show, and I hope that you halflings have enjoyed this. Obviously, don't forget that you can find us at TB Halflings if you want to follow us on social medias. You can find our Patreon at the same place at patreon.com/TB Halflings, where there's a bunch of goodies there. And I think that's about everything, so I'm going to go ahead and wrap up the show. Thank you very much. So long, Shire folk.
So long, Shire folk.
I still wave every episode.
Me
you know?
Too.
I wave like, too.
All three of us waved.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.